Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. An Egyptian man who hijacked a passenger plane forcing it to land in Cyprus has been arrested following a 10-6-hour standoff. All 55 passengers aboard the Egypt Air plane were able to escape unharmed before the man turned himself over to authorities at Larnaca Airport. Egyptian and Cypriot officials said the incident was not terror-related. They described the man identified as Saif el-Din Mustafa as mentally unstable. Hussein Abdul Karim Tantawe Mubarak is the Egyptian ambassador in Nicosia.
As far as I know, he has a family problem, probably with his members of his family, probably ex-wife or something.
How did he manage to convince people that he had a suicide vest?
That is something amazing. We have to find out how he managed to convince the passengers on board that he is having explosives.
Egyptian officials had first reported the hijacker threatened to detonate the suicide belt. They later said it was a fake. The U.S. Tuesday joined U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon in France in calling on Libyan authorities to allow a unity government into the country of Libya to begin its work. John Kirby is a U.S. spokesman.
We find reprehensible efforts by these individuals to undermine the political process, to derail the establishment of the government of national accord, and to slow, if not halt, the implementation of the Libyan political agreement signed in secret.
A UN-brokered power-sharing deal was announced in December, calling for creation of a unity government to end nearly 5 years of turmoil. UN Chief Ban called for cooperation with the new presidency council, said those obstructing the political process must be held to account. France said it's urgent for Libya's factions to allow the cabinet to function. This is VOA News. Greek police patrolling the country's northern border clashed Tuesday with several hundred migrants and refugees who've been blocked from crossing into Macedonia. Meanwhile, Italy has said the number of migrants rescued in its maritime operations has risen sharply, while the European Union said the number of migrants leaving Turkey for the West has dropped sharply in the past week. The top U.S. general, Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Joseph Dunford, said Tuesday he has no doubt Russian involvement in Syria propped up the Damascus government of President Bashar al-Assad.
With respect to Russian activity in Syria, there's absolutely no doubt that they stabilized the regime and they have put themselves in a position to influence a political solution. And we're still really assessing what the real meaning of their stated withdrawal is, or more importantly, what the impact is going to be. It's just been a matter of a week.
General Dunford said in Washington that Damascus was reeling in July and August of last year, but is now in much better shape. The U.S. has ordered military families to leave parts of southern Turkey over safety concerns. Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook says the order involves hundreds of military dependents from Incirlik Air Base, Izmir, and Mugla.
This was a decision made out of an abundance of caution. Given the overall picture, the security threats that we looked at in the region, there's no specific threat that triggered this, but a broader decision based on what we've seen in the region. You all have seen some of the things playing out in the region, that this decision was being made at this time.
Cook said the decision is not permanent, adding that Incirlik will continue playing a key role in U.S.-Turkey operations against the Islamic State. Several suspected Somali pirates accused of hijacking a French yacht in 2011, killing a man on board, kidnapping his wife, went on trial Tuesday in Paris. The suspects all face life in prison.
Nous attendons une répartition juste.
Lionel Maroney, lawyer for the abducted woman, Evelyn Colombo, said his client expects a legitimate and fair sharing of responsibilities. Colombo was in the hands of pirates for 2 days after her husband was killed. She was rescued by the Spanish Navy. Morocco is rejecting a UN explanation of a remark made by Secretary General Ban Ki-moon, who described Morocco's annexation of the Western Sahara an occupation. The foreign ministry Tuesday said it was a premeditated act to shelter the nature of the dispute. Morocco has expelled most of the civilian experts attached to a UN peacekeeping mission and closed the military liaison office. Deputy U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken warned Tuesday that North Korea's ongoing nuclear and missile tests are a profound threat to regional stability. Speaking in Washington, Blinken urged China to see to it that its ally Pyongyang get on a path to denuclearization. The head of the U.S. Central Bank, Janet Yellen, said Tuesday the U.S. should proceed carefully as it looks to gradually raise a key interest rate. She expressed continued concern over the state of the global economy. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, March 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Nigeria's defense minister says the military has made enormous progress against Boko Haram.
Within 1 year, the coming of a president has changed the game. Look at what is happening before, whereby three states, the whole eastern region was under the terrorists. Now, we may have only maybe one or two local governments.
Retired General Dan Ali is Nigeria's defense minister. Millions of people displaced by Boko Haram are living in overcrowded homes across Nigeria. The WHO says the Ebola outbreak in West Africa is over. And Zambia's Episcopal Conference calls on the political parties to tone down their rhetoric.
There was a commitment made by the political party leaders themselves that they will endeavor to use civilized language as they address political issues.
Father Cleophas Longo is Secretary General of the Episcopal Conference of Zambia. Sudan vows intensified military campaign against rebels. And Zimbabwe's indigenization minister says there's no turning back on plans to cancel the licenses of companies that failed to comply. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigeria's defense minister says the military under President Muhammadu Buhari has made enormous gains in the fight against Boko Haram. Retired General Dan Ali says under President Buhari, the military has reclaimed much of the land that was occupied by the terrorist group and that operations in the Sambisa forest have destroyed terrorist camps and weapons. On the identity of the would-be girl suicide bomber, who told Cameroon authorities that she is one of the 276 Nigerian schoolgirls kidnapped by Boko Haram in 2014, General Ali says the Nigerian military has information that the girl was captured from Chibok, but that she was not among the 276 captured in 2014. He told me in our Washington studio that the Nigerian military has been trying to find the girls, but it has been difficult because apparently Boko Haram has dispersed them in different locations.
You see, it's something that has happened long ago, and all along we have been trying to track them. Specifically, if I tell you that they are in a particular place, it's a difficult decision. Nobody can keep up to 250 girls in a particular place. So the girls might have been distributed. And remember that for some time now, they have been using these small girls to be bombing. 2-3 packages like that. So a lot of them might have been involved in such similar cases.
So are you in touch with the Cameroonian government about this particular girl who is claiming that she is one of the Chibok girls?
She was one of the Chibok girls, but not associated with the earlier ones. We have gotten a report on that the girl was taken from Chigwa, but not among those that were earlier captured by them.
Have you sent people to Cameroon, or are you planning to send people?
No, we have an entire relationship. We have a defense section, and we have other intelligence sources that are working with the Cameroonian people. They have sent the report, and I have a copy of the report in my office.
Do you have any intelligence about the Chibok girls?
Like I told you earlier on, I said they might have been redistributed in a particular area of a place we cannot see specifically.
Mr. Defense Minister, what's your strategy on Boko Haram now? What's the military strategy for Boko Haram now?
Of course, like I said in my earlier interview with the House of Representatives, we have achieved a lot. Within 1 year, the coming of a president has changed the game. Look at what is happening before, whereby three states, the whole eastern region, was under the terrorists. Now, we may have only maybe one or two local governments. And the poorest we are talking of, the Sambisa, we are advancing inside it. So I assure you, within 2-3 months, we should be able to clear that forest.
International support in the fight against Boko Haram, how would you describe that?
That we have been receiving in terms of specialized training, exchange of information, and intelligence sharing. If you can remember, my president have been going around. In fact, the five neighbors we have, Chad, Cameroon, Benin, have been integrated. We are all working together and we are sharing information. The international community is also advising us in the right direction.
May I ask you, I don't know, I spoke with somebody from Rivers State, and the allegation was that the military was being deployed there about the election there, the local election. Is the military deployed in Rivers State?
Military is not per se deployed. They are deployed only for that election. And Rivers State is not peculiar alone. All the states that we had election, we do deploy military. So it's not a new thing. If you can remember, in Bayelsa too, we had, even though because of the military, that election wouldn't have even been done. It wouldn't have been conclusive.
Retired General Dan Ali is Nigeria's defense minister. He was speaking with me in our Washington studio. The Boko Haram insurgency has displaced more than 2 million people in northern Nigeria. The government says it is making progress against the group, but security remains tenuous and many displaced people fear they will not go home anytime soon. Christine reports from Maiduguri, Nigeria.
John Ali fled his village near the northeast Nigerian town of Gwoza when Boko Haram attacked. Ali did not think he would be gone long, but he has not been back in nearly 2 years. Home is now a boiling hot tin shack in a displaced persons camp in the Borno state capital, Maiduguri. Ali has no money, cannot find work, and is dependent on relief agencies for the two meals he and his family are served each day.
Up to date, these Boko Haram men are still on operation. They are stable. They even camped out in our village. So there is no way for us to go back. But we are willing to go back.
Ali is one of the more than 2.1 million Nigerians who fled fighting between Boko Haram and the military in the northeast. That fighting left many towns and villages destroyed and made vital roads impassable. A Borno State government report obtained by VOA says the insurgency has destroyed nearly a million houses and about 5,000 classrooms. The majority of displaced people do not live in camps, but rather stay in households in cities across Nigeria. Nonetheless, a Borno state official told VOA the government does not want displaced persons camps to become permanent. Maiduguri is home to about 800,000 people who fled Boko Haram, according to the International Organization for Migration. The National Emergency Management Agency says it wants to start moving displaced people back home this year, but only if the towns that were damaged in the fighting are habitable. NEMA spokesman Sani Dati says safety is another problem.
Almost all the communities are clear. But you know, there are some pockets of them here and there. So I think what they are trying to do now, they are trying to clear up all the communities so that they will not declare it safe for all residents to return back.
Nigeria's military says it has secured Maiduguri, reopened major roads to the city, and is clearing Boko Haram from remote villages where the militants are hiding. Displaced people, however, say they still do not feel safe. A farmer who lived in a village near the town of Gwoza before fleeing to Maiduguri, Musa Guba, says he hopes to go home soon, but will not do so until peace is restored in his area. With no work where they are and no way to get back home, millions of displaced people like Guba remain in limbo in northern Nigeria. Chris Stein for VOA News, Maiduguri, Nigeria.
2 years after three West African countries were struck with the largest Ebola epidemic in history, the World Health Organization has declared the outbreak over. The WHO says the Ebola situation in Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea no longer constitutes a public health emergency of international concern. Lisa Schlein reports from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
An emergency committee that convened at WHO headquarters to review the Ebola situation in West Africa says Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea have successfully interrupted their original chains of Ebola virus transmission. The UN agency acknowledges that Guinea is dealing with a cluster of new Ebola cases and deaths, but it says flare-ups such as this are expected. The committee says the three countries are able to respond rapidly to new virus emergencies so that Ebola no longer poses an international threat. While this is good news, WHO Director General Margaret Chan notes that data show the Ebola virus can remain in the semen of male survivors, so care must be taken as sexual transmission of the disease can occur for a year after the full recovery of the patient.
A high level of vigilance and response capacity must be maintained to ensure the ability of the countries to prevent the Ebola infections and to rapidly detect and respond to flare-ups in future.
The vice chair of the International Health Regulations Emergency Committee, Robert Stephan, agrees that complacency would be wrong, but he says the situation has evolved so positively that all temporary restrictions against West Africa should be rescinded.
In previous decades, there have been every now and then outbreaks of Ebola in various parts of sub-Saharan Africa, and that did not mean that it would be a public health emergency of international concern. So we are back to normal situation with respect to Ebola right now.
The Emergency Committee recommends that all travel and trade restrictions with respect to Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone be immediately lifted. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Today's Wednesday, March 30th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. The Episcopal Conference of Zambia has called on all political parties and their presidential candidates to take steps to curb politically motivated violence ahead of the country's August 11th presidential election. The conference met yesterday, Tuesday, with all political parties and their candidates. Father Cleophas Longu, Secretary General of the Episcopal Conference of Zambia, says the meeting made a number of proposals to deal with some of the root causes of the political tension and violence in the country. He said among these is the Public Order Act, which the police used to manage political gatherings.
There was a general consensus that the law itself has some gaps and needed to be reviewed and be amended so that the application of it does not disadvantage any political party, especially the opposition party, but that the law is applied fairly and objectively by those who have that responsibility, especially the police. The meeting also resolved that from now onwards, political parties must desist from using youth, especially those who are party cadres, to dress in attire or party regalia, which is kind of militarized, because we have seen that in the recent past, political members, especially young people, are used by giving them uniforms, which are quite similar to the uniforms used by the soldiers. And that gives them that power to do things in a ruly way. Further to that, there was a resolution that henceforth, the use or access to public places, especially the markets, the bus station, the rail stations, and other public facilities must be not politicized.
Father Cleopat, I must say that reading the Zambian newspapers, I've realized that the level of political rhetoric has been very intense. So did the meeting address this particular issue?
There was a commitment made by the political party leaders themselves that from now onwards, they will endeavor to use civilized language as they address political issues, and that the campaigns in the run-up to the August 11 elections should be issue-based rather than, you know, focusing on character assassination.
Father, who do you think, where is this violence emanating from? The police or all sides, all political parties are responsible for that?
Well, first of all, there was an acknowledgement among political parties themselves that this is an issue which is beyond one political party. The main sources identified were the biased application of the law, the biased, you know, conduct or unfair conduct by the police, the issue of the media, sometimes because of the polarized media situation in the country, that some media houses have been fueling or fanning sentiments of violence, but also the fact that to a greater extent, the government, in this case we are referring to the executive, has not done enough in order to curb these acts of violence.
Father Cleophas Longu is the Secretary General of the Episcopal Conference of Zambia. He was speaking with me from Lusaka. the deadline set by the African Union High-Level Implementation Panel for Sudanese rebel groups and opposition forces to sign a roadmap for peace with the Sudanese government has expired. Now, and as Nabil Biagio reports from Khartoum, Sudan says its military offensive on rebel positions will intensify until the roadmap agreement is accepted.
Sudanese government officials in Thabo Mbeki, the head of the mediating panel, signed the roadmap agreement a week ago. The rebels were given until yesterday to sign the deal and discuss a cessation of hostilities in Darfur, South Kordofan, and Blue Nile states, and take part in President Omar al-Bashir's internal national dialogue. Presidential aide Ibrahim Mahmoud Hamid said yesterday that if the rebels did not sign the roadmap agreement by the end of the day, Mbeki would have to turn over his report to the African Peace and Security Council so that the council could deal with what he termed the intransigent rebels. Ahmed Bilal is Sudan's information minister.
There are two now camps. One camp is peace and the other one is war. The rebels now, they choose the second side. They are not willing to sign, they are not willing for peace. From our side, we actually ask the international community and the peace security, the UN Security Council as well, to make all their efforts and pressure on them to change their mind.
The past few days have seen an escalation of military hostilities between government troops and the Sudan People's Liberation Army North in South Kordofan. Bilal says the rebels are not serious about ending the conflict in Sudan. Bilal says the SPLA North rebels are responsible in particular for the current spate of violence in South Kordofan. Sudanese political science lecturer Ismail Ibrahim, who teaches at Khartoum University, says the African Union and the international community should give the rebels and opposition forces more time to reconsider signing the roadmap. He says any military action taken by the government or any attempt by the international community to slap sanctions on the rebel groups might not have the desired effect.
They should not hurry to the Peace and Security Council of the African Union or even to take any harsh measures or something like that. The nature of the conflict, you know, and its complications, you know, cannot be solved like that, you know, by just issuing sanctions.
Ibrahim advises the government and the international community to keep all channels of communication open with the rebels. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
Zimbabwe's indigenization minister, Patrick Zuwao, has vowed that there is no going back on plans by the government to cancel the licenses of foreign companies that failed to comply with the cabinet's April 1st deadline to submit their black empowerment compliance plans. The country's empowerment law states that at least 51% of the shares of every company and any other business should be owned by indigenous Zimbabweans. But criticism of the government's plan is increasing. The International Monetary Fund has called on the government to clarify the somewhat opaque law that many say is driving away foreign investors. But Indigenization Minister Zuwao says the government will continue with its plans and said he has personally organized an indigenization clinic for those who have questions.
I have not even bothered to check with line ministries in terms of what the progress is. But however, what has then been transpiring is that there have been a number of companies that have been seeking clarity on a lot of issues, some of which are downright lies in terms of what they have been told about the Indigenization and Economic Empowerment Act, Chapter 1433. Some of those lies have actually come from institutions such as yours, which are the media, that have been misleading companies. So what I have resolved to do, I was requested by one of the companies to conduct an indigenization compliance clinic where companies that feel that they are affected come in to just get a few pointers directly from myself as the minister responsible for administering that act. To say, look, this is what the act says and these are the options that are available to each and every company in terms of the legislation.
So when is this indigenization clinic likely to begin?
Well, we will begin tomorrow at 8 o'clock.
How many companies have registered so far?
No, it's a walk-in clinic. You know, just like a clinic, my brother. If you've got a toothache, you go to the clinic and you say, I have a toothache. And then the doctor says, look, you need aspirin or whatever it is that you need. And if your ailment is of a bigger nature, then the doctor says, look, I really cannot assist you. You need to go to a specialist.
You said there are certain companies that fall under the threshold that the government is looking at. If you can give examples.
My brother, you've got General Notice 114 of 2011, General Notice 459 of 2011, and then General Notice 280 of 2012. Those set the thresholds sector by sector.
We have had concerns, Honorable Minister, from the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, who an organization that says it has written a letter to you, and also the War Veterans faction led by Mr. Mchangwa, saying that the route that the government is taking is wrong.
First, no. With all due respect to the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, it's not them that I'm laughing at. The Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions, I've just had an interview with a journalist who showed me the letter that was written by the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions. So I believe the letter is in the post. But I will engage with the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions. But I don't want to engage with the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions in the media.
That was Zimbabwe's Indigenization Minister Patrick Zuwau speaking from Harare with Blessing Zulu of VOA Zimbabwe program. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Marco Woman in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we focus on football. Victories by the Egyptian Pharaohs and Morocco's Atlas Lions on Tuesday confirmed their qualification for the 2017 Orange Africa Cup of Nations in Gabon. The Pharaohs pipped visiting Nigeria's Super Eagles by a solitary goal in Alexandria. Consequently, Nigeria will miss their second consecutive Nations Cup. Morocco dismissed the visiting Blue Sharks from Cape Verde Islands 2-0 in Agadir. Meanwhile, Burundi upset hosts Namibia 3-1 in Windhoek. Liberia outclassed Djibouti 5-0 in Monrovia, as the Sudan held African champions Ivory Coast to a 1-1 draw in Khartoum. Senegal upstaged their hosts Niger 2-1 in Niamey. Togo and Tunisia drew 0-0 in Lome, as did South Africa and Cameroon in Eteguini. Elsewhere, Lesotho pipped Seychelles 2-1 in Maseru. Ethiopia and Algeria drew 3-3 in Addis Ababa. Visiting Democratic Republic of Congo upset Angola 2-0 in Luanda. Guinea pipped hosts Malawi 2-1 in Blantyre. Gambia and Mauritania drew 0-0 in Bakau, as did Uganda and Burkina Faso in Kampala, as Rwanda mauled Mauritius 5-0 in Kigali. Staying with the Nations Cup, at the end of the fourth round and with two rounds left, the conclusion of the 2017 Nations Cup qualifiers, Morocco and Senegal lead groups F and K with 12 points respectively. Algeria, Egypt, Ghana and Mali are at the summit of groups J, G, H and C with 10 points each. The Democratic Republic of Congo top group B with 9 points, while Zimbabwe and Cameroon head group L and M with 8 points respectively. Tunisia, Burkina Faso, Gabon and Guinea-Bissau top group A, D, I and E with 7 points each. In Namibia, defending champions Ghana Black Starlets pipped their peers from Westphalia in Germany 2-1 to retain their biannual Four Nations Under-17 tournament trophy over the weekend. The week-long contest took place in Namibia's port city of Walvis Bay, some 400 kilometers west of the Namibian capital, Windhoek. Namibia bagged the bronze medal without breaking any sweat, as South Africa failed to honor their commitment to participate in the tournament. Finally, hosts Morocco beat Egypt 3-1 in their beach soccer encounter in Casablanca. Earlier on, Egypt prevailed 3-2 in their first encounter. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And that's it for this Wednesday, March 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing all of you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
Can't get enough of the Sunny Side of Sports? Well, we've solved that problem. We now have a half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. So visit voanews.com for more details and enjoy the show.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.